This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Baseball is back. The 2025 MLB season is upon us. So what's the easiest way to keep up with all the big stars, top scores, and fun storylines from the night before? What's the solution? Is there a secret?
Chocolate milk and squats. That's a secret.
Not quite, Pete, but there is the Morning Lineup podcast, a quick, less than 10-minute morning highlight show from MLB. It airs Mondays through Fridays on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. You bring the chocolate milk, we'll bring the baseball news.
We are Dukes and Bell. We start off every day and every hour by saying, hey, man. We got some headlines, news, breaking news just dropping in regards to the Baltimore Ravens. We will talk about the Falcons and why there are some concerns about one of our picks, according to draft analysts and experts. But, Mike, a statement from Eric DaCosta, who's the general manager of the Ravens, saying sometimes football decisions are incredibly difficult, and this is one of those instances. They have released Justin Tucker. Justin Tucker, one of the best kickers in NFL history, guys, not just from a percentage standpoint, made a lot of big kicks. A lot of people think he's a future Hall of Famer. But, Mike, with all that's going on in his personal life, the Ravens have made a decision to cut bait. And the statement goes on to say, we are grateful for Justin's many contributions while playing for the Ravens. We sincerely wish him and his family the very best in their next chapter of their lives. Guys, Justin Tucker, actually, I think 60 Minutes did a piece on him a few years ago.
He's an opera singer. He does opera singing in his sidelight. And he was considered one of the, at the time, one of the pillars of the community in Baltimore. And it's like, wow, the wheels fall off.
But he was one of the reasons why 60 Minutes went after him, because he was so accurate, one of the most accurate kickers. But bottom line is, they're releasing him. He is accused of inappropriate behavior in Baltimore massage parlors. If you're not familiar with, or rise with yourself with this story, it is, I hate to say it, Mike, Deshaun Watson-ish.
Yeah, it's very Deshaun Watson-esque. And initially, sometimes you just have your come to Jesus moment and just say, I did it, I screwed up. He tried to fight it, denied all the charges, said that wasn't how he remembered things going down. And then just like the Deshaun Watson thing, all of a sudden people started coming out of the woodwork with accusations that he was doing stuff he shouldn't be doing.
Okay, so that is a little bit of a surprise because, again, he's not gone to court or any of this.
But here's
stuff.
The thing. He's also struggled. Last year was his worst year as a pro.
He did.
So, and now maybe we know why there were some distractions. Now
absolutely. Well, maybe.
Perhaps some of this was coming to a head or whatever.
Yeah, they knew it was coming out or however that may play.
I mean, it's rare that a kicker can have an old-timer's day. Most kickers, they just, the wheels fall off. You know, that's like, remember Morton Anderson? He's one of the all-time greats. Remember we brought him back at the end because our kicker situation was so bad? And Morton's like, look, I can't kick it more than 35 yards. At the end, from inside, he was great. But yeah, man, what a strange year it was for him. Hey, we're kind of in a state of flux with our kicker right now. We're going to have a competition for Younghoe Koo. Brought in a guy that kicked over in Europe and Germany.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Also, we just found this out, and we love having him on the show. But the Rangers fired their hitting coach. It's a talented team. All right,
Bam Bam Mullins got fired, right?
They're really good, but they're not hitting. And our buddy Brett Boone just got the Rangers hitting job. Bob Nightingale reporting the Rangers have hired Brett Boone as their new Major League hitting coach. Congratulations to him, but that sucks for us because we love having him on, and his insight is really good. Played a long time in the majors. Right. Yes, his brother is the Yankees manager. Yes, that's the same Boone.
Right.
But that news coming down from Bob Nightingale about 30 minutes ago, Mike. So
he's got a good relationship with Bruce Bochy, too.
He does. He does. So that is, and we'll see, man. Like, again, he could go in there and be a hero. B could turn that thing around, and all of a sudden these guys start getting on base and performing like they can. That's a very good lineup, but they just haven't been hitting. So either way, Brett Boone, congratulations. We'll see what happens there, but he will not be joining us as he does on a biweekly situation.
Braves couldn't have called Brett Boone.
Here you go.
Bring back Kevin Seitzer.
Come on, man.
Hey, man. 2 years ago, best offense in baseball.
Yeah, I know. All right, let's talk about the Falcons here, Mike. Grant McCauley's coming up in less than 15 minutes. We'll talk to him about that because Braves do salvage a game against the Dodgers. They do not get swept at home. Concerns about James Pierce Jr. Look, I don't want to overblow this. I don't want to make this more than what it is. We're simply putting this on the table because this continues to be the fodder that's out there, Mike, when we talk about our draft. It's not us. It's other people like, CBS's Josh Edwards, who has questioned the pick, or Charles McDonald of Yahoo Sports, who says pressure to justify the Falcons trading back into the first round. These are the kind of things that you're hearing when it comes to James. And look, I don't know if they're fair or warranted. He hasn't played a down for us. Maybe he's that dude. But this is still a lot of people talking about whether or not this was the right pick, as I've said, or more importantly, did we give up too much to get him?
Right, because as we later learn, we'll play some of that audio for you, where you're in the Eagles war room. There's a little bit of background noise, but you can hear what's going on, where they're like, what? The Falcons did what? So, look, we like Pierce Jr. We said it earlier. It was a difficult for him to come in on the heels of our conversation with Jalen Walker, because as we said to start the program, Jalen Walker is so friggin' impressive. He's everything. If you're a Georgia fan, you want representing your program. He's that dude. I mean, and Pierce is just a different energy. And who knows? That has nothing to do with mean anything to what he's going to be on the football field. But it's interesting that they were so enamored with him and must just love the athleticism, the speed, the size, which, as you said on draft night, you can't coach it. But a lot of folks, and again, only time will tell, but a lot of folks, you guys read the same things we've said. Thought it was a reach. Thought it was a real reach, and the ask was too rich.
Let's hear that audio that Mike's talking about. This is Howie Roseman, guys, and whether you think the Eagles have done it right, they do have a Super Bowl. They are the defending champions. They've won a couple here in the last 8 years, and the reality is that Howie Roseman was trying to move back into the first round themselves, and he says, nobody's picking up the phone. I want you to hear this awkward laugh at the end as they're in the war room. And as I said to Mike, were they laughing with us or are they laughing at us once they find out what's going on?
Atlanta coughs up a second tomorrow night, a seventh on Saturday, and a first rounder next year.
Wow, they traded their one.
First next year. Who did?
For what?
Atlanta.
Atlanta?
For what? Just the pick?
No, first and a third. Two and a one.
Understand why people aren't taking our pick, our deals.
So, you asked the question earlier. Are they laughing with us or laughing at us? And why would you be laughing with us? We committed a first-round pick there, as we said to a couple of our audience on social media. Look, Kerry's got to roll the dice. If you believe this is the guy, you feel someone's going to snake you on it, you got to do what you got to do, you know? I mean, you could have argued that, you know, Dan Reeves didn't want to mess around with the chance that anyone was going to snake, us for Mike Vick. So we had to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, I've always said if you target a guy and you think he's a difference maker, you go get him. And I don't want to hear about the excuses. This is what I'm always telling you guys about. They can find a way to get it done, right? It's always like, we can't make that trade. Yes, you can. You willing to give it up? You can make the trade. They did. It wasn't like you were going to get the first overall pick, but it's a haul. And for me, I look at this and I say, as one of our listeners said, put him up, see Dukes, and follow Mike and Mike Bell ATL. You know, Terry felt like his hand was going to be forced. He knows he's got to make the playoffs. Great. I have no issues with that. I just wonder whether Terry's here or not. Did we get the right guy? And
right.
That's going to be the bigger question for me. And if it's not, not only is he losing his job, but then 3 years down the road, Mike, we're sitting here talking about, man, well, look at who was available. Because we do that all the time as we go back and look at these drafts.
Now, you guys know it's a crapshoot. 50% of that first round is not going to pan out, you know. Some guys won't even have that fifth-year option picked up. We've seen it happen here. But you look at him and he says, hey, I got to roll the dice because you just laid it out. If I don't get this team in the playoffs, I'm done. My goose is cooked. And that'll be some other general manager's problem having to figure out how to, you know, manipulate this draft. I just don't like it if... And only Pierce is just a dude.
He's got to be more than that.
You did not move those picks, guys, all those things we just talked about, for a guy who's going to be a project. He's got to have I said to you earlier, impact. I mean, and if you don't think that, the fans certainly feel he's going to have an impact for what you did.
Yeah, Mike. And by the way, we're not killing James Pierce Jr. I hope he is special.
We're just going with what we know right now.
I can't tell you how good he's going to be or he's not going to be. But I do know he goes into the start of his career with a little bit more pressure than even a Jalen Walker. And it's funny, Mike, I asked Jalen about that. If you guys remember when we interviewed him that Friday up at Flower Branch, and Jalen was like, I feel no pressure.
Mm.
Okay, that's what I want my first overall pick to say, but he's also played at the premier program in the country and played in big games. Like he shouldn't feel any pressure. For, James Pierce Jr., it might feel a little bit different, Mike. Tennessee hasn't won national championships. Yes, they've been good. They've been relevant. But it's been a different animal. So I just feel like that's the pressure he's going to take into training camp and into the season with him is we're watching and seeing how productive he is. And what's the effort like, Mike? Is it consistent?
Right. That's the thing. That's why, as we said, we were gonna sit there the first day. You might want us to, but I was not going to sit there and go, so they said you don't love football. You know what I mean? So it's the greatest day of the kid's life. He just came down and introduces a member of the Falcons. He's been drafted. But that's the concern. That's what you guys, if you read the same stuff we've seen as far as the draft evaluations. And then you look at, and see, this is where, if you go back to, okay, what did you want? Mike, I wanted Mike Green. I mean, you know, the Ravens, and it's interesting, the Ravens just went through a little fiasco with Justin Tucker, but they didn't have any qualms about Mike Green's alleged whatever, which no one's ever said anything has led to any charges in his life. But obviously there was some fire there, some smoke, I should say. But the Ravens always seem to get it right. Malachi Starks, and they get Mike Green in the second round.
Yeah, and I think both of those guys are going to be uber productive. Malachi goes in there with Kyle Hamilton, one of the best safeties in the league, and he's joining that defensive front who already gets after it. And now, if you're Mike Green, Mike, you can pin your ears back. Listen, Mike Green's not a savior there. He's just a piece. And all of a sudden, we're going to look up and watch. I guarantee you he probably has double-digit sacks this year because of the guys and the way that their system is. He may have ended up I love to have him here, and I wanted him here, but he may end up in the right place for him.
Well, I mean, Mykal Williams is going to a defensive line. They got to re-energize, but they got some stars. They got established guys, both the tackle and edge. You know, one of the Boses is over there now still. But you look at the Falcons, and guys, Fred B. just said, you know, the guys, speed and power. That's one of the things you and I said. They love that speed. If you watch the highlight reel from Tennessee, it's that combination of the size element and the speed. You can't coach that. And that's what Terry, and to a certain degree, I presume Raheem was, impressed by. They also, again, did their due diligence. They feel they got underneath his fingernails to know he's the right guy for the Falcons.
All right, if you're just joining us, 8-time All-Pro, not Pro Bowler, All-Pro kicker Justin Tucker released from the Ravens. If you're saying, oh, somebody pick him up. Mike, with these allegations right now, I'm not sure if that's going to happen anytime soon. 7-time Pro Bowler, 8-time All-Pro. And guys, he's already made the 2010s All-Decade team. When you look at his career field goal percentage, it's the highest in the NFL ever, 89%. Mike, a minimum of 100 attempts. So we're talking about, if not the best kicker, maybe the second or third best kicker, however you want to rate it. But this guy was really good, and now he's out of work.
Well, he's also coming off his worst season as a pro. Everything you said on that resume, 100% accurate. But last year, missing extra points, missing field goals, missing game winners, missing things he used to make. You know, we went through this with Younghoe Koo. Kicking, it's just – and nobody knows how to figure it out unless you're a kicker.
Well,
I'm saying. Because Younghoe Koo, same thing. We're thinking this guy's all pro, and he was right there behind Justin Tucker statistically until last year. He was missing stuff that he would never miss.
Okay, well, I'm glad you brought that up. Now, we know that they are moving on from Justin Tucker because, again, the accusations of improper behavior. Well, Younghoe Koo doesn't have any of that. But if he's inconsistent and he blew games for you and he missed the most field goals of anybody last year, what are we doing?
Right. And we bring in a kicker who kicked over in Germany. So we've got a new dude, Lenny Krieg. Krieg, Carl, which means war in German. So if you have a Krieg is coming. And this dude, there'll be a competition. Hopefully Younghoe Koo. Everyone loves Koo. Everyone loves shouting Koo. But last year you were booing Koo because he was missing some big kicks. Games, the Saints game you talk about all the time. There were some moments where we needed the kicker to be the last thing we'd be worrying about, but we were.
Coming up, guys, Braves begin a four-game series with the Reds tonight. It's A.J. Smith-Sharver. Let's talk about the Dodgers series because I think it was a litmus test for our Braves. We'll ask Grant McCauley all of that and more coming up. All right, let's talk to Grant McCauley. Grant, there's a lot going on with our Braves. They get a game last night. Let's talk about the series before we turn the page and talk about who's in town tonight. First things first, Riley is hot, and Snit was talking about it. We need him to remain hot. You know, Friday night he had that double with two outs in the sixth. That got us on the board. But yesterday, two home runs. He seems like he's back in the zone.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the guys that you look at and you feel, I think that you have to be getting everything you can from him, from Marcell Ozuna, from Matt Olson, Ozzy Albies, Michael Harris. And you're not getting all these guys going at the exact same time yet, but these are the ones that have got to carry it. And I know we're not going back to talk about the Colorado series again, but I know a lot of folks were upset about that getaway day loss. And why is Eddie Rosario playing? I'm like, well, Eddie Rosario is kind of a non-factor if the rest of the guys are doing the things that they should be doing. I mean, losing 2-1 in Colorado wasn't a great tone setter for what turned into the weekend of losing again by a 2-1 score on Friday. Saturday, I think you have to put in its own chapter because it was just a strange turn of events. But clearly, Spencer Schwellenbach's got a few things to maybe adjust and tweak on his end. And then yesterday was just a game you had to have, and you needed somebody to step up and, you know, do the thing, as they say. And Austin Riley did that, not once but twice, with his multi-home run game to give the Braves just enough to eke out a win. And I think there were a lot of things to like inside of that game that really saved the weekend, the homestand thus far, and that series, and stopped the Braves from kind of losing some of the goodwill they'd just been building over the last couple of weeks.
I know that we spent some time last week talking about how Bryce Elder seems like he's getting things better and better, and now another good outing for Bryce Elder. And then I asked you last week about Schwellenbach. So how do you get Schwellenbach back on track? Because I know that the league makes adjustments, things change, and it's, mm-hmm. you've got to – I know you say it all the time, Grant, you know, maybe start changing your pitch order, you know, work backwards. Yeah. How do they get Schwelly back to what we thought he was a few weeks back?
I think that a lot of it is strategy and game planning and execution for him. And Schwellenbach said after that start on Saturday night that, look, I'm not putting the ball where I want to. So even if you look at the line score and you don't see, okay, well, he didn't hit two guys and throw three wild pitches and walk five, that doesn't mean that he was putting the ball where it needed to be put. And the proof of that was the, I believe, 10 or 11 balls that were put in play at nearly 100 miles an hour by the Dodgers. And if you're scoring at home, that's a very hard hit ball and is typically going to result in good things for the hitter as long as it's not right at somebody. And unfortunately for Spencer Schwellenbach, most of those weren't. So I think it's really about making the kind of quality pitches that he wants to in the zone, around the zone, continuing to challenge hitters, but just making sure that he doesn't fall into any kind of patterns or anything that could be, you know, picked up on by the other team, because they get a say in this too. If they crack the code, you can see some nights like we've seen a handful of times in his young career, but the stuff is there. The pitch mix is there. I think the precision is there. He can dial it in. It's just the constant game of adjustments. When you think you got it figured out, typically the league will tell you, all right, time to try something different, because the rest of the league has maybe figured you out.
While we're talking about pitching, Elder.
Yeah.
I mean, he's been damn good, and we got to give him some props, right? I mean, five innings in his past six starts, he's gone at least five. Six innings in three of those. What has been the difference for Elder? And by the way, the Braves have won, what, each of his past, I think they've won their four of his starts where his ERA is like 3.1 or 3.18 or something. What's been the difference with Bryce Elder?
Yeah, I think that really for him, it's kind of what we just got done talking about, being able to locate and execute his game plan and do it his way. He got a lot of swing and miss early in that start. I don't know if you had this on your bingo card. I know I didn't have it on mine, but you look at the MVP lineup that the Dodgers put out there of Ohtani, Betts, and Freeman batting 1-2-3. They have done that 121 times together in a Dodgers uniform. And the first two times ever that they were struck out in order, in succession, in the first inning was Grant Holmes and Bryce Elder in two out of the 3 days of that series. So baseball will show you some weird things sometimes, but I think Bryce Elder has just shown you quality and quantity of innings. He's been able to, you know, as the old saying goes, navigate that lineup, get the Brave into the sixth inning routinely. And I asked Brian Snicker about it. How big has it been? And he said, look, we had to have it. And we know Bryce is capable of doing things like this, but it feels a lot like the success that he was having in 2023 that earned him that All-Star bid. So they need it from everybody they can get it from, whether it's a Bryce Elder or a Grant Holmes on the mound and Nick Allen at shortstop and Eli White in the outfield. It's not all going to be about your superstars. It certainly helps when they're playing well, like we talked about, but it takes contributions all up and down that roster, all 26 guys, to grab the rope and all pull it in the right direction, and the same direction for that matter.
Grant McCauley's with us, guys, talking about the Bravos that get four with the Reds after the Dodgers. They salvaged the win, as Carl said. The thing that we were talking about earlier, it's early. We know that. But it does seem a little bit a lot like last year. it doesn't pass the eye test right now, Grant. I mean, Matt Olson and Ozzie, too many guys left on base. I know Matt did provide the one home run. Unfortunately, they didn't give enough from anyone else to help Grant Holmes. But what's it going to take to get Matt Olson going? Because he's batting just 212 right now, for instance, versus right-handers. And he's not really doing what we need him to do.
Yeah, I like what I'm seeing from Matt Olson in a vacuum, if that makes sense. Yeah, you can look at those numbers, and the numbers are who you are, certainly, and that's not lost on Matt. It's not lost on, you know, the fans. It's not lost on us discussing it either. But this is a guy who has lowered his strikeout rate from a year ago. He has raised his walk rate. He is hitting line drives and making hard contact at the top level in all of Major League Baseball, and he's making good swing choices. He just hasn't had a lot to show for it, and if there was a reward for it, which there's not, he's one of the unluckiest, if not the unluckiest hitter in baseball this year, just based on some of those advanced metrics. So I think as much as anything, Mike, it's just stay the course, because these are going to eventually start to fall and find gaps and go over the wall. That's the other thing.
Right.
We talked about this 3-4 weeks ago. His launch angle was at the bottom of the league in terms of efficiency. It's been rising, which means the ball's going to be rising. And as the weather heats up, I think Matt Olson will as well. So for him, it's a matter of just continuing to do what he's doing. And for Ozzie Albies, it's also a launch angle thing for him, but he is not a StatCast darling. You don't go look at that page and see, oh, he hits the ball hard all the time. He's one of the best in the league at this, 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 and this. It's kind of, he's the sum of the parts. He's one of those players that he does a little bit of everything and he does it well, but it doesn't necessarily look or sound the same as it comes off the bat for a Matt Olson. But yeah, if he's able to start lifting the ball and getting some more power into it, I think we'll start to see the Ozzie we're accustomed to seeing. But you know, last year, the broken wrist derailed him, the broken toe did, so maybe this has just kind of been working back into that everyday playing approach again and just getting comfortable. And, you know, confidence starts to build when you start to collect some hits, and maybe that's a part of the equation that he just needs to see to know that, all right, I've kind of got some things going here, and just start swinging the bat with some confidence.
Grant, I got excited last night. I'm watching Pierce Johnson with runners on, right, first and second, no outs in the sixth. And he comes in and records three consecutive outs. Is he falling into the role that they want him to? How do you see the Braves using him? Have they figured that out yet? Because that was a positive moment.
Yeah, and Snit talked about that before the game as well, just loving what he saw in that appearance by Pierce Johnson to come in and get some very big outs. And we know that the leverage, it's not all about, okay, well, who's pitching the ninth and who's the setup guy or the setup guys. It is a lot of time, there's some big outs that can keep you from winning games that have to be recorded in the sixth or the seventh inning. And I think Pierce Johnson right now is kind of the veteran that they trust the most to do that. Deisbel Hernandez seems to be the guy who's settling in a little bit at the setup spot. And then you can use Dylan Lee where you need to. And I know he gave up a home run yesterday, but don't get it twisted. This is still one of the better left-handed relievers in the National League, and he's been under the radar for a while. So with those three, plus Raisel Iglesias looking a lot more like Raisel Iglesias yesterday, I think you can start to feel or at least see the vision of this bullpen. It'd be nice for some other guys to step up and do some things and maybe get some help down the line, but at least the pieces seem like they're starting to be put in place, to your point, Carl.
All right. For the first time this week, Grant, Ronald Watch. We kind of do it every day. I suppose he's going down to Florida for a rehab. What's it? Is there anything to be worried about? I think is it cryptic or just or what's going on?
No, and I know that this is causing a lot of hand-wringing and consternation is my word for it, my $2 word, and that people, it's not exciting to hear, okay, well, we were under the impression that Ronald will be back. What's going on? It's the first week of May. Wait, he's going to L.A. Now he's back in Florida. He's going to go to L.A. again. That was the news today. Just to get checked off or checked out by his doctors and his surgical team to make sure that this knee is, if it's possible, which it's not mathematically, 110% ready. They are not going to rush him. They are taking all of the possible precautions they can, because I think they learned when he pushed it last time and he came back at the end of April and started to play. And then a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month, you started to feel that there was residual issues. So they're using all of that information and trying to find the best ways to be proactive about making sure that they've checked every possible box they can to put him in the best position to succeed, so that he'll look a lot more like the Acuna we're accustomed to seeing than the guy that had to battle the sore knee over the course of 2022. And I don't think that there's really anything wrong with that. Some of these other guys have got to figure it out. Ronald will make the team better when he gets back. The when, though, remains the question.
All right, great stuff, Grant. We'll see what happens tonight. Should be another fun series as homestand continues, and we'll talk to you tomorrow about everything that goes down tonight.
Yeah, look forward to it. Thanks, guys.
No doubt. All right, guys. Just came in.
Are Georgia fans going to be happy?
Very. And we'll tell you how it happened when we come back as Georgia gets its five-star QB. It's Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Or visit www.ncpgambling.org. Recruiting is the lifeblood of college football. That hasn't changed. NIL has, but that hasn't changed. It's Dukes and Bell, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. The number one quarterback in the country out of Nashville, his name's Jared Curtis, moments ago committed to the University of Georgia and Kirby Smart. As Mike and I were talking to Grant McCauley there about the Braves, he had a brief press conference. He's taking questions now in his home gym. Well, I say home, but his high school gym.
Right up in Nashville?
Yeah, and Mike, we were just listening to some of this presser where he's being asked questions by some folks, again, from Georgia media, Dog Nation, some folks are there, some Nashville and Tennessee folks are there as well. But they said, when did you know? He said, I think I knew Friday. And then Jared Curtis, who, by the way, is 6'4", listed at 6'4", 225, he said, I called Kirby to tell him, and I started the conversation off by saying, Coach, I really appreciate it, but, and he said, then I had to stop. And I couldn't joke with him anymore. And Kirby was elated that he was making the decision to come to Georgia. But, you know, he was, I think he was trying to let some pressure off, Mike, some, you know, some tension by joking with Coach. But he said that just moments ago. But he says, Mike Bobo, and I repeat, you're probably going to see this a lot, had a lot to do with this. His relationship with Bobo, he said, I had committed to Georgia prior. I decommitted. I wanted to see what else was out there. And then knowing all the coaches in Athens, Bobo. So for everybody, we talk about Mike Bobo as an OC, and rightfully so. But Mike, he is a great recruiter, and people have known that.
No, that's I just hate his play calling. Basically, he's a tremendous recruiter. You know, if you want to make Bobo the quarterback's coach, you get somebody in here who can actually figure out when it's time to run the ball and when it's time to throw it. But no, but in all seriousness, that's a guy that you just laid it out there. That's always been one of his strong suits, and he got the job done. So now hopefully they got an offensive line when this kid does get a chance, the young man does get a chance to play. But you and I were talking about this earlier, and things have changed so much. The nothing against, and this is, again, nothing against Jared Curtis. It's just the times that he's playing in. Where we can be excited about, hey, here's the number one quarterback in the country, but we're just so jaded now because there's no guarantee this dude will be here next year. You know, we talked about the Dylan Raiola recruitment and coming all the way to live in Georgia and go to Buford High School. And then after that, just, you know, goes back to Nebraska. This young man, though, is something a lot of Georgia fans have been following and recruiting, been very excited about because they think he's got he's the real deal. But when does he get to be the quarterback? Because we talked about, was it Juju Lewis? Julian Lewis was talking about his, I don't want to wait 3 years to be the quarterback. I guess, is he comfortable with that? He's comfortable with that idea now?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, look.
Because you know how it goes, man.
Of course. These guys, their minds change. Their parents' minds change. I mean, people around them, it's just what
depth
it is.
Depth chart changes?
Correct. Yep. So, but I will say this, and this is the positive for Georgia, and it remains to be the part that I think is important. The attraction of going to the University of Georgia and making this decision is still what everybody remembers. Now, Mike, if he stays, he goes, however long he's there, whatever, but you just had the number one quarterback in the country say, I'm going to Georgia. And that alone says a lot. It speaks volumes about what they're doing there in Athens and how he thinks that this is the right program for him. We don't know if it will be. We hope it is. But I think that goes a long way because when you see this footage and he's taking off his coat, he had a little sweater thing on today, like a pull-up zipper thing, and he pulls it off and he's got the Georgia shirt on and everybody's clapping. That's what you're going to remember. That's what people are going to see. So from that standpoint, that's a feather in the back of Kirby's cap, right? That he goes, oh, we got another one. We got another one saying, hey, Georgia's the spot. And I think that's the most important thing. I hope a young man, the best of luck, and I hope he stays, Mike, and you know, through the course of his career and sets all the records and does all that things. But you're getting, again, another five-star, Mike. We should be talking about chips.
Right, and that's where it's got to certainly turn into the thing which Georgia fans have come to expect. The problem is, as we said, the landscape has just been altered to the point where your depth, what made you, you know, so good years ago now, you know, there's no margin for error. You lose that starting center, you lose that left tackle, you lose that edge rusher, then you can't replace it with another five-star because you don't have that five-star. Everybody has pilfered what you've got. And by the way, Georgia, you know, it's not like they're also living in some pretty good conditions as far as who they're getting in the portal. They got a great linebacker coming from West Point. They got a lot of big-time studs, but it's just a different animal. So hopefully this young man gets it done. We think about, you know, Matthew Stafford. You and I were joking earlier about Jacob Eason, right? So sometimes it's a lot of hype, and sometimes it just isn't. Like, I mean, everybody's got that guy that was going to be the next big thing, but hopefully this young man will. 6'3", 225, as Carl said, and a guy that's got a big arm. And now if you're a Georgia fan, you say, hey, This is, you know, make a run for more natties 2.0, and he'll be there. Maybe Gunnar Stockton does it this year, right?
Maybe.
I mean, I just, it's funny. We were talking about Michigan. They were in the news today because their coach is going to miss two more games. This thing never ends. You know, it would have been interesting to know and see if Georgia hadn't slipped up that season. Could they have had that? You know, remember Michigan wanted a piece of Georgia?
They did.
I don't know about Michigan, but I think Ohio State might have a piece of Georgia this year.
Well, look, it depends on how much money they're going to spend on their roster. I have heard that because there are no constraints at this point until this ruling comes down potentially, right. But I've heard the University of Texas is going all in, Mike. That they're spending, right. They're going to spend more money on the roster this year than anybody in college football.
Like the rest of the Big 12, old Big 12 combined.
And they've got the wherewithal to do it. So, again, if that's not a concern, because if you don't think the money buys the team, then ask Ohio State.
That's how Michigan, you know, Michigan won. Anyway, the cheating thing, look, at the end of the day, they found a way to beat Ohio State. The quarterback didn't play too well. But still, the Michigan thing happened. Ohio State, how do they win a championship? The same way Michigan won. Aside from the cheating aspect, they got all their upperclassmen to stay. That's it. You said it. They just simply got everybody to stick around for one more year, run it back, and it worked.
Jerry Curtis is going to be a dog as he commits up in Nashville today. Five-star, number one quarterback in the country. Mike already took an inch off of him. They list him as 6'4", 225. You said 6'3".
I'm going by Dog Nation, man.
Look, big boy, man. I mean, seriously, a quarterback, that's a stout young man. So he's got the frame. Like, I know many of you have not seen him play, and neither have we. But he's got the frame, and then you look at the highlight tape, and I don't ever get overly excited, J-Day, about these highlight tapes because, you know, that sometimes can skew your views. But obviously everybody was on him, and Mike, he thanked Oregon, by the way, and Dan Lanning. And what do you think, Kirby and Dan Lanning? At some point, they'll share a phone call. You got him. All right, you know.
But as we said, you know, Bobo and the contact, I mean, it is, you know, as you said to start this conversation, it's the lifeblood of the program. But I just, you know, would love to see them. I would love to see Georgia just be excellent in every aspect. With all the money that Georgia's got for assistance and all the things that Rick never had, I just still wonder about this offensive line. And do you have the right people? Are you bringing in the right staff to get that to where it needs to be to do the things you want to do when this kid does get a chance to play quarterback?
Yeah, it's a great question. We're going to find out. And by the way, again, just because he's committed to Mike's point, you know, this is the class of 2026. So you've got Gunnar Stockton. You know what your quarterback room looks like now.
Yeah, Ryan Pulisi's there.
Yes, this kid is coming, and this is the class of 26. But it's a big commitment, man. It's a big deal.
Hey, also today, we joked around about this with Connor Riley. He thinks it's a more window dressing or just grandstanding. But either way, for what it's worth, Nick Saban, along with Tommy Tuberville, lobbying the president to maybe do some executive orders to try to streamline or at least create something of a cap until somebody takes it to court and they throw it out. But I would love to see something until, you know, because nobody wants more from the NCAA, more rules and more oversight from them. You wish we could come up with something from college football itself, like that super conference that you and I have talked about. But either way, Nick Saban, Tuberville saying, hey, is there any way we could come up with an idea that the president, somebody write it and he let him sign off on it?
The more conversation for me, the better. That's kind of where I'm at with this. I do not think, as Connor Riley said, an executive order is going to be able to do the job. There's too many moving parts here with states and laws and how everything is operated. But joint Congress passing a law, Mike, that's different. And so, you know, it's got to be approved. Even if you were to say, hey, this is what we need to do, it would have to be congressionally approved. So I don't know, man. I feel like the more conversation, the more people get involved, the decision makers and the law changers, then it's going to be better for college football. The more this stays like in the background, there's no rush to change anything. So no. I'm happy that they talked about it. I'm glad Saban got a chance to talk to the president.
Look, as we say all the time, no matter whether it's early signing or any kind of things that everyone feels like the world's gone off its rocker, the same top 25, I always maintain, is the same top 25 or top 30 or 40, those same teams. Some are always rising or falling. But right now, I mean, if you're Georgia, you're in a great spot. It's just, as a fan, you just want some degree of consistency and just knowing what you've got, you know, and some continuity. Because right now, it's just like, every day you hear something like, so what is Texas dropping? Like $150 million on players this year?
40.
$140 million?
No, $40 million.
So as far as you know?
40. Ohio State spent 20.
I thought everything's bigger in Texas.
22 or 23 last year. Right. I'm just saying.
How much are you sending in?
It's none of your business. Can you imagine, seriously?
It depends where you are. Like right now, if you're Georgia Tech, you feel good about Brent Key.
Yeah.
He's got a foundation, and he's certainly using the portal, and he's bringing pieces in. He's doing a good job recruiting. You know, but you just feel like everything's kind of just weighted against you right now. Like it truly is the haves and that. And look, Georgia Tech, we all know they got a wealthy alumni base. Same thing. Auburn, the perennials, all the usual suspects. Is Clemson going to bounce back this year? But this money, like, you cannot poo-poo it. It's the hugest thing because
no, it is.
Without it, and you've seen it. If you've seen it happen, as we just mentioned, with Michigan and Ohio State, you've got to have it.
Kirby, 20 minutes ago, as soon as the kid announced, go Dawgs.
It's just typical Kirby.
Right on.
He doesn't say anything. He doesn't make it more than what it is. It's always just go Dawgs. All right. Again, that's a big story. We'll continue to talk about it as we get into tomorrow's show, guys. Again, Braves start a series tonight. Mike, hopefully we can, you know, not just win the series. I'd like to get a sweep and get some real momentum offensively. But Riley is hot, man, and Grant talked about it. This is where we expected him to be living. He did not start the season this way. But what he's been doing over the last 24 games, this dude's been as good as anybody right now.
And I know that Grant, it's not that Grant's making excuses. He's just telling you, here's what's going on with Matt Olson. But, I mean, I need Matt Olson to get on a tear, you know, where the balls are dropping or going over the fence consistently. Because, you know, he's not like – everybody laments that Freddie – we just saw Freddie here, and everybody got all nostalgic with Freddie all weekend – and with reason to be. I mean, they should have just given him the 6 year and got on with their lives because he's more clutch than Matt Olson will ever be. You know, so let's hope Matt Olson gets it in gear. I mean, he's streaky good and streaky bad.
Yeah, man. Look, and here's the other part. We've been saying this, and we don't have a date for Ronald Acuna. We want him back as bad as you guys do. I don't know at what point does it switch, Mike, and he has the kind of impact we expect him to. Right? The Strider injury thing. Are you worried about that, by the way?
Well, I mean, the guy just screwed up having a catch with his hamstring. So, I mean, look, not saying Strider's born under a bad sign or something right now, but it just, the worm has got to turn. But everybody who just, but all we're saying is everyone who just thinks Strider comes right back and he's off and running or Ronald comes right back. I mean, yeah, knock wood. We all hope so, but it's just, you need a spark. This team just looks like the sort of one step forward, two steps back that we saw through so much of last summer.
Yeah.
It could change. It could change.
It definitely could.
But the guys who are paid the big money need to do your job.
All right, man. We got to get out of the way. Turtles got the night show. Let's clear our throat. Hey, congratulations to Brett Boone, man. He's been a big part of our show over the last few years as one of the baseball guys we get a chance to visit with. He is now the new hitting coach for the Texas Rangers. He took that job today, Mike. So we, at some point, we'll get a chance to chop it up with Brett Boone. But his focus has certainly changed. But we want to give him a big shout-out. Hey, thanks to Connor Riley for coming on today. Great stuff from him. And if you're just joining us, Jared Curtis out of Nashville, number one quarterback, decides to commit to the Dawgs. Hey, Dom, thank you, man. He's going to be a part of the family here as Big O and his wife are expecting their next child. So Dom's going to be hanging out with us for a few weeks. And my man, Day-Day, thank you again. Mike Bell, welcome back. Glad to have you back. Glad you're safe.
Clear your throat.
Hey, man. Now, his dad couldn't watch, but Tyrese Halliburton went into Cleveland and put on a show. If you didn't see it, Indiana, man. I mean, I don't know if you were expecting them to maybe get the split. That's all you're trying to do those first two games of a series. But NBA playoffs, the ratings have been great. We got compelling stories. I don't know if the Knicks are going to have a chance. I think it's a gentleman's sweep. Jason Tatum's averaging 34 points against the Knicks in the four games this year. And I find myself still... You know, I might not be a Draymond fan, but I'm pulling for Steph Curry to get back one last chance. And as Steph said, probably our last best chance to get there with Jimmy Butler. So it's a very compelling bunch of storylines in the NBA playoffs.
I agree with you, bud. I really do. Eric DaCosta, general manager of the Ravens, says it's hard to release guys, especially in this situation. Justin Tucker has been a special part of our organization. But Justin Tucker, arguably the best kicker in NFL history, certainly from a field goal percentage-wise, released today by the Baltimore Ravens. Guys, here's the moral to the story. Stay out of massage parlors. This is twice now that massages have somehow played a role in derailing NFL players. We saw with Deshaun Watson.
Right.
Hopefully we thought he was past it. He hadn't been the same since. And now Justin Tucker with the inappropriate behavior in Baltimore massage parlors, Mike, lingering over his head, has the Ravens saying, we got to let you go.
Have these guys ever heard of old-fashioned hookers?
If you love the show.
Tell your friends.
If you don't.
Some Karen wouldn't watch your bag at the airport for 2 minutes.
I don't know you.